get to talk about a Bears victory. It's Bears victory, whatever day you're listening to this podcast. The ChicagoFootball.com Bears podcast, that is. I am your host, Kevin Fishbane, joined by my partner in crime, Arthur Arkish. We'll have Hub Arkish at the end of the show. We will recap that victory over the Raiders and preview Bears-Chiefs with Herbie Teope of the Topeka Capital Journal and ChiefsDigest.com. Of course, our executive producer Dan Mott and associate producer John Sally are on hand. Arthur, Bears 22, Raiders 20. There was really never a doubt in Bears fans' minds that they were going to win that game, right?
Well, when you have Robbie Gould on a weekend when every other place kicker in the league, seemingly, I guess except for Justin Tucker and the guy we'll see in Kansas City this weekend, Cairo Santos, is missing clutch opportunities, the Bears have Robbie Gould. You have to feel good about that. And it's amazing what a difference a win makes. Just the vibe around Hallis Hall, the vibe around the city of Chicago. A much, much better week than we've been dealing with the first month of the year.
Well, just to bring folks inside the press box and part of our process. So, you know, Arthur and I are sitting next to each other, and I have, you know, I'm working on what we call our quick hits. So if you go to ChicagoFootball.com at the end of every game, you read the quick hits. And John Sally, the associate producer, he could probably attest to this. The headline was quick hits from Chicago Bears 20-19 loss to the Raiders. And the first subhead was mistakes cripple Bears again, Cutler interception, Forte fumble, penalties an issue. Arthur, you were probably, you know, thinking about, you know, your story. We hadn't really talked yet. We wanted to see what had happened. And they drive downfield, Gold hits the field goal, story's rewritten, you know, quick hits from Bears win. Cutler has a great game. Gold comes through in the clutch. And you're right. It's amazing how just the entire narrative about this team changes like that on a dime.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. I think we started to learn a lot about the character of this ball club that John Fox and his staff are putting together. And I think we do need to keep things in perspective. This is an Oakland Raiders team that is clearly improved, but has a long way to go before they're ready to contend too. So we're going to learn a lot more as the weeks you know, trudge along. But it, really, just the whole mindset is much, much better after a really impressive game on a lot of different levels.
Oh, and people will know how realistic we are about this team when we get to the predictions at the end of the show, facing a 1-3 Chiefs team. But we're not there yet. We still want to allow Bears fans and listeners to kind of bask in the victory over the Raiders. So it is now time for our weekly edition of the Three and Out.
One, two, three. I'm going to give you to the count of three.
Then shalt thou count to three.
I'm going to count to three.
1, 2, 5.
Lisa, three.
Three idiots. Gosh, you'd think this is my first time hosting a podcast. I didn't even mention ChicagoFootball.com, at Bears_Insider on Twitter, at Arthur Arkish. I'm at K Fishbane, but you guys don't care. You just want to hear our three and out. One positive, one negative, one moment that mattered from the game. Arthur, your positive.
Yeah, it's kind of all-encompassing, Kevin. I'm just going to go with the way that the team handled adversity, particularly on offense. You can talk about Jay Cutler battling through the hamstring and the guts he showed. Talk about Matt Slauson moving over to center. Charles Leno, first NFL start. The wide receivers shaking off drops to come through. I'm talking about Marquise Wilson and Eddie Royal on the final drive. I kind of teased it just saying we learned a lot about this team, but it was pretty neat to watch them respond. Whereas in times past we'd see the Cutler pick and everything would fall apart. That wasn't the case Sunday. I thought it was really impressive.
And I think you and I would both agree that's a testament to a veteran coaching staff. You know, coordinators that have been here before, a head coach that has been through this stuff before. My big positive, I'll go specifically Tracy Porter. I think we were all surprised just to see him starting for Alan Ball. Remember, Porter played 5 snaps against Seattle. He didn't play at all in the first 2 games this season. He only played in 1 preseason game. He only played in 3 games last year. Not only is he starting, he played every snap and followed Amari Cooper around the field. Cooper's touchdown came against Sherrick McManus, not Tracy Porter, who otherwise was outstanding. I think we might have a little cornerback battle on our hands. We'll talk more about that when we get to the news and the notes later in the show. Arthur, we do have to talk about negatives. There were a fair amount. As you said, this is the Raiders. They're playing better, but they're still not that good. So what's kind of the big negative that stands out to you from Sunday's win?
Yeah, for me, it was just the lack of the killer instinct, and maybe it takes time to develop this. In fact, I know it does, and it's clear the Bears are still working on it. But to get the big takeaways and then only come away with 3 points off of both of them, starting both of those drives in the plus side of the field, I was also a little disappointed in John. I wasn't surprised. I knew the book on John Fox being a conservative guy coming in, but to see him not try and put more points on the board before half and then put that much faith in Robbie Gould at the end of the game, letting 30 seconds burn off the clock and settle for that 51-yarder. Obviously, it ended up being a moot point, but it kind of shows that there's still a lot of room for growth for this club.
You know, it's funny, Arthur, the way we talked about how narratives change. I know John Fox on Monday was asked about the end-of-game clock management. If they had lost, I think you'd have to go back to the end of the first half. For one thing, not going for it from the one-yard line, and then not calling a timeout right after Eddie Goldman's sack, which if the Raiders were going to run out the clock, the Bears would have had about 40, 50 seconds left as opposed to just 25 and that extra timeout. But, you know, they win. We don't talk to them about it, but it's something to kind of keep an eye on going forward. My big negative looking back at the game is the injuries. You know, I think every team in the NFL deals with this stuff. And, you know, when you're covering a team, you kind of think, wow, the Bears are just getting – and it's 3 years in a row now. They've been riddled by injuries. But to see Will Montgomery on the third play of the game out for the year, and then Anshel Roll, who just never gets hurt, hurt his ankle, and it was much better than it looked. Supposedly, x-rays negative, and we'll find out more this week about his availability. Bears just signed Sherrod Martin just before we started taping this podcast. So, you know, they just can't avoid that injury bug. But luckily, Cutler's healthy for them. We'll see if Alshon Jeffrey returns. Arthur, your one moment that mattered from Sunday's win.
Yeah, I'm going for the final Raiders offensive play. Jay Cutler has turned the ball over. It's third and one. It's at the Bears 22, I believe, and Pernell McPhee, as he's done so many times already in the first month of the season, just shuts the door on Roy Helu. A loss of one forces the Raiders to settle for a field goal. And I also do want to just give a quick hat tip to Kyle Fuller, the other big play after a turnover on third and four, dislodging the ball from Michael Rivera in the red zone, holding the Raiders to two field goals after what could have been two crippling turnovers.
Yeah, absolutely. Those two plays were huge. And you know, Fuller was pretty quiet again. And there was maybe one pass play that was on him. But that play was huge because he had to come off his receiver. So he had to have that kind of recognition. It kind of brought me back to that game against San Francisco last year when he made highest flying pick coming off his receiver, recognizing where the ball was. So, you know, still trying to get Fuller back to where the Bears want him to be. Mine's just a few plays after yours. The throw to Marquise Wilson that put them in field goal range. You know, they were moving the ball pretty well, but for Cutler to make that throw, and this is a tease, Chicago Football Playbook on our website, chicagofootball.com, break down that play. Because if you go back and watch, and I was actually watching at the snap, Kyle Long wins his battle with Khalil Mack because Cutler threw it in that direction. If Kyle Long does not win that, Mack probably knocks that ball down, or at least makes it a tougher throw for Cutler. Great throw, great catch by Marquise Wilson. They kicked the field goal two plays later. So, and I know you wrote about Marquise Wilson, Arthur, so we'll kind of wrap up this Raiders game with what Wilson did Sunday. You know, you and I have talked about this. I think sometimes we in the media and fans are too critical to Marquise Wilson. We need to step back and remember he's a seventh-round pick. He shouldn't even be playing right now. He wouldn't be playing if Kevin White and Alshon Jeffrey were healthy. He'd be the number four receiver. But he's in this big spot. He has that big game. Do you think that was a blip or maybe a sign of things to come?
No, I think it was actually a sign of things to come. I thought the fact that he had the big drop, what was it, three plays before the really, really good grab on the sideline on the final drive, the fact that Cutler went back to him, the fact that he really got that offense going on the first drive of the game, showing a little bit of that speed and what he can do after the catch. We saw a back shoulder throw. It just seems like the rapport is building a little bit between Marquise and Cutler. And obviously, you know, I can't count on Alshon Jeffrey at this point, so I don't know how long this receiving core is going to look like this, but it's certainly a positive development. And obviously we have to mention, if Phil Emery hadn't put Marquise Wilson on this pedestal, maybe some in the media wouldn't maybe have, you know, the expectations that they have for the past couple of years.
Arthur, how dare you disrespect the dynamic playmaking abilities of Marquise Wilson.
I was hoping that was coming. That's why I went there with that.
The dynamite Phil Emery impression.
Well, I heard, I got some lengthy monologues from Phil over the 2 years I covered him. I do want to bring our producers in for a moment because I do like to kind of get the insight of a fan here because, you know, Arthur and I are pretty open about the fact that, and most journalists will be, maybe not the most cynical ones, but when the team wins, it makes our jobs a little bit easier. It's an easier locker room to manage. There's some more stories you can get out of it, and there's readers are more interested. So I'm curious, the Bears win. Are you guys, I'll start with you first, John, are you looking at it like, okay, they just beat the Raiders, they're still not very good? Or are you saying, okay, wow, Color looked great, Chiefs are 1-3, the Lions are 0-4, then the bye week and a pretty weak second half schedule? I don't know. They could really do something here.
No, I'm looking at it like, okay, it's nice to get a win. It's nice that the Bears, you know, won't be 0-16. That's a positive thing, right?
You don't want Jared Goff?
No, 1-16.
Yeah, I do want Jared Goff, but you know, an 0-16 season. That's, I don't think anybody wants that. That's just misery. But it's a positive, and I think I will probably leave it at that.
Damn, Matt, were you jumping for joy?
No.
God, you guys are such realists over here.
I'm with John. Yeah, I looked at it as this is going to be a 1-15 season.
Okay. All right. I think who is it? That's our, I think it's Jeremy Werner, our friend over at ESPN Champagne, who had the hashtag in the trough for Goff.
We got to get a better one than that. I like Jeremy.
Scoff for Goff. I don't know, yeah. But I don't think the Bears are going to find themselves in that competition anyways for number one pick. But long way to go, and it is time for us to turn the page. Head on to week 5, Bears at Chiefs. And Arthur, I think when we were looking at the schedule before the season, I think a lot of people probably said this is a loss because I know we had the Chiefs as our AFC West champions. You have a tough place to play. Bears traveling to Arrowhead, where the last time they went there, they lost 31-3. But this Chiefs team, ever since they lost that, it was a brutal loss to Denver. And anybody who's watching that game, I mean, they gave that game away. And then they lose to Green Bay and Cincinnati. They're 1-3 now. They are reeling. And we'll learn more about the Chiefs in a little bit with an interview with Herbie Tiopi. But Arthur, could you, when you looked at the schedule before the season, this game looked like a much bigger, you know, discrepancy than it does now, doesn't it?
Yeah, no doubt. And I think you kind of hit it on the head in saying, really, this Chiefs team hasn't recovered from that loss to the Broncos. Jamal Charles fumbling in the final 30 seconds and Bradley Roby returning it for the game-winning touchdown. Many wondered if Andy Reid should have been taking a knee and playing for overtime. And obviously, he didn't. We know how that turned out. So the Chiefs have had a really tough schedule, as you just alluded to, having to go into Lambeau and into Cincinnati, who I think the Bengals have been better than anyone thinks. But they've got their issues. They went out and they got Jeremy Maclin. He's put up big garbage time numbers, but they haven't found a way to use him. And the heat has been on Alex Smith. So a lot of problems with this team and a desperate team for sure that the Bears will be facing Sunday.
Well, I look forward, as I do every week, to your scouting report. For those of you who don't know, ChicagoFootball.com, every Wednesday, Arthur breaks down the Bears opponent using the All-22. It's an awesome feature. And there are some things in that Chiefs offense, because I watch a lot of that game against Denver, where the offense looked really nice. You know, that West Coast was humming. You get a guy like Maclin and Charles and Kelsey the ball in space. It's exactly what Andy Reid wants. You get those pass rushers coming off the edge. But then you look at that the defense specifically. It just got torched by Andy Dalton last week. And suddenly you start to point out all the flaws in this team, the offensive line, the secondary and whatnot. But, you know, from your basic, you know, from what you've seen of the Chiefs so far, how much do you think this is scheme, personnel, or where are the deficiencies here?
Well, you know, I think the biggest deficiency is on the offensive line. I know we'll get to it in a little bit, but Alex Smith is kind of a passive quarterback to begin with. He's not a guy who's really willing to push the ball downfield, but that was the big emphasis this offseason and going and spending on Jeremy Maclin is we have to get a little bit more vertical on offense. You know, Smith certainly has his limitations, but I don't think it's on him. He has not had time to dial up the deep ball. That's clearly been the issue on offense. And of course, Andy Reid, I think people will always wonder if he's giving the football to his franchise running back enough. I don't think he is. And then on defense, I think there's been a number of factors. They haven't been healthy. But at the same time, that pass rush has been pretty inconsistent. And I think they put a lot of pressure on the guys in the back end. And some of them haven't quite been up to that task just yet.
I will say Andy Reid is one of my favorite NFL coaches in terms of what he looks like when the camera pans to him after a bad play. And this has nothing to do with, you know, Reed's physique. He just has like this look at his face of kind of confusion and just anger and just staring straight ahead. He's up there for me when it comes to those kind of that coach camera shot right after a bad play.
And in light of Monday night's obviously debacle in Seattle, we have to throw Jim Caldwell, Jim Caldwell,
that was marvelous. Yeah, that was oh man, Jim. we'll talk more about the Lions next week, but that was a disaster. And by the way, if you have never seen Andy Reid participate in the the pass, punt, run, kick. The thing that I forgot the three things I'm thinking of. He did it as a kid, but he's like, you know, 8 feet tall. You should go look it up.
Pass and kick?
Pump, pass, and kick. That's not like a cover football for a living or anything, John. Thank you. Pump, pass, and kick, Andy Reid. You should YouTube it. It'll be the best way for you to get ready for Chiefs Bears. Now, Arthur, we're going to do our weekly matchup breakdown. Again, you can see this every Thursday in much more detail in our weekly insert in the Northwest Herald, Chicago Sun-Times, and Daily Herald. We start off Bears rushing offense versus Chiefs run defense.
Yeah, so the Bears have the number 10 rushing offense in the league right now. The Chiefs are number 14 defending the run. Kansas City allowed 4 rushing touchdowns last week to the Bengals. Jeremy Hill had 3 of them. I think falling behind early has hurt the Chiefs because opponents have just been willing to really feature the run, and that's been a little bit of an issue for them. But we know that that's what the Bears are committed to doing. Matt Forte has been terrific. We should say Matt Forte essentially is the rushing offense because there's been a reluctance to really involve anyone else consistently. And I think with Jay Cutler's hamstring, kind of that athleticism, the zone read aspect of it has been eliminated a little bit, but we're going to call it even here. It is pretty close. You could kind of flip a coin on this one, so we'll call it even. Turning from the Bears passing offense to the Chiefs pass defense, Kevin, why don't you tell us what you see in that matchup?
Chiefs have allowed the most passing touchdowns in the league, and if you turn on the tape and watch what Andy Dalton did to them, it was ugly. And I think it was like 13.7 yards a pass attempt, which is the second best of any quarterback in any game this season, throwing for over 300 yards, finding guys wide open up the seam, down the sideline, and most of all, his protection was great. They didn't touch, they hit him one time in the entire game. Now, the Bears' offensive line is much different than the Bengals' offensive line. We don't know who's going to be starting where, aside from we know Kyle Long will be at right tackle. So that's could be an issue. But the way Jay Cutler looked on Sunday, and I expect Alshon Jeffery to be back this Sunday. Not that it means anything, because he could still be day-to-day for months and years and whatever, but I think the Bears win this matchup. It doesn't mean it's going to necessarily mean they'll win the game, but I think they're going to be able to find ways to move the ball through the air against this Chiefs pass defense that's really struggling and battled injuries. All right, other side of the ball, Arthur, Jamaal Charles and that Chiefs rushing attack against a Bears run defense that was very good against Oakland.
Yeah, they were. They're coming off easily their best performance. They're still in the rankings. It listed at 24th, so there's a lot of room for improvement yet. Obviously, they had the tough second half against Seattle and undrafted rookie Thomas Rawls, but really impressive the way they shut the door on Latavius Murray last week. I think that Eddie Goldman is coming along, coming off his best game. Jarvis Jenkins continues to be the consistent guy on that defensive line, and obviously Pernell McPhee has been awesome. Adrian Amos coming down running the alley, I think, has been more physical and more disciplined than most expected. But like you said, Jamaal Charles, an all-pro, a guy who can take it the distance any time he touches the ball. He's such a good fit in that West Coast scheme. The Bears are improving, but we have to give the edge to the Chiefs here based just off Charles' dynamic ability. And then we'll conclude here, obviously, with the Chiefs passing offense versus the Bears pass defense. Can Alex Smith get it going, or will the Bears secondary kind of continue and build off what they did last week?
I think Alex Smith gets it going. I think this is a passing offense that's really going to stress Shea McClellan and Christian Jones. And Shea McClellan's been tight in coverage, but he hasn't made a play on the ball yet. Christian Jones has not made an impact play yet this season. And I think those two, when it comes to covering Travis Kelce or Jamaal Charles, that's going to be a problem. Jeremy Maclin across the middle of the field, if Sheriff Manis has lined up against him in the slot, I think that's a matchup problem. Also, Adrian Amos, I think, has played very well. John Fox said the same on Monday. Next to him is going to probably be either Sherrod Martin, who's been on the street, you know, not on an NFL team for the first 4 weeks for a reason, or Harold Jones-Cordy, who played Division II college football last year. I think that's going to be a real issue. Yes, Tracy Porter played well. Kyle Fuller's playing better. But I think the way the Chiefs run their offense, even though the Bears have a nice pass rush and you know should get their pressure on him against a bad Chiefs offensive line, I still have to give Kansas City the slight edge. All right, we're going to go in much more detail into this matchup, Bears versus Chiefs, as we do every week going behind enemy lines. This week, this is our interview with Herbie Tiopi of ChiefsDigest.com and the Topeka Capital Journal. Behind enemy lines. Herbie, I want to start on the defensive side of the ball for the Kansas City Chiefs. This was an area that the Chiefs have been pretty good the past couple seasons. Right now, they are ranked last in scoring defense, just behind the Chicago Bears. So I'm curious, you know, no pass rush since week two. Andy Dalton torched them last week. Is this a case of they kind of ran into Cincinnati and Green Bay buzzsaws on the road, or are there some real concerns on this defense?
There are some absolutely real concerns here, because first off, the Kansas City Chiefs were a darling heading into this season. This is a team that a lot of folks, and even us in the Chiefs media, we thought this team would be a lot further along than what they are right now. We can sit here and point that they played the Packers, they played the Bengals, they played the Denver Broncos, you know, three of those teams combined 12-0. But if this is a team that wants to take that next step, enough of those excuses. You should be able to beat at least one of those teams, maybe two of the three. When I look at this team defensively, there's so many issues here. You mentioned one, they haven't been able to get the sack in the past couple of games. The other thing that really concerns me is the pass defense. This is a defense that's been torched in three straight games. In two straight games, they've given up 300-yard passers, and when you look at what they did last season, they didn't give up a 300-yard passer. They've given up 30 or more points in three straight games. Last season, they didn't allow a 30-point game. So when you look at this unit, you have to be concerned.
Herbie, do you think that the issues are more in terms of personnel? Is it health? I know there's been some, health and suspension, some guys missing in the secondary. I know Don Terry Poe's not back up to 100%. But when you just look on paper, it seems like the talent is there. Where do you think the disconnect is coming with the defensive struggles?
When I look at some of these defensive struggles, some of the blame has to be put on defensive coordinator Bob Sutton, the inability to make adjustments. The Denver Broncos made it a point to go after Jamel Fleming on the outside. There was no rotation over there to give him a hand. The Chiefs got stubborn there and stayed in a single high safety look. And when you're playing against guys like Peyton Manning and Andy Dalton and Aaron Rodgers, they're going to attack the weakness. You mentioned the suspension there with Sean Smith. He was able to come back last week against the Cincinnati Bengals, and certainly that helps them, but they lost Philip Gaines. So this has been a rotating door on the back end of coverage and the quarterback position. The unfortunate thing is Aaron Rodgers exploited the nickel cornerback position when Philip Gaines went down. They had to move strong safety Ron Parker there last week against the Bengals, and that just opens up other areas because Parker is so good on the back end. A lot of it has to do, I think, with this scheme. They've just been stubborn where they're not making any adjustments. That press man scheme relies so much to get pressure on the quarterback, and in these past couple of games, as you guys have seen, it's just not there.
You know, Herbie, we know the names Tom Bahaly, Justin Houston, Eric Berry. You mentioned a few guys just now, but, you know, for Bears fans listening, who are some other Chiefs defensive players they should keep an eye out on? I know, statistically speaking, Jay Howard seems to be off to a nice start, but you know this team so well. Who are some names, you know, in that front seven and the secondary that Bears fans might not know about and they'll get a good glimpse of at Arrowhead on Sunday?
Primarily those guys there, but Jay Howard has been playing lights out. He was the guy that had packed on so much weight during the offseason because with Dontari Poe having that back surgery, he's up to 330 pounds. The Chiefs currently list him at 306, which is 24 pounds off. But he's a guy who's played lights out in the interior. The other two players along that defensive line, Alan Bailey, has kind of disappeared as well. I mean, he played very well against the Houston Texans in week one. I believe he had two sacks. But he's a guy, when his game is on, he can wreak havoc in the interior. Defensively, Eric Berry is back there, but the Chiefs, they play so many dime packages. You'll see three safeties on the field at the same time, Hussein Abdullah, Eric Berry, and now Tyvon Branch if the Chiefs keep Ron Parker to defend against the nickel cornerback position. Their linebacker positions, obviously a lot of folks know who Derek Johnson is, and depending on Josh Maga's health, who he suffered a thigh injury against the Bengals on that first drive and didn't come back in, the Bears may get a very good look at Ramiq Wilson, their rookie linebacker out of Georgia.
Herbie, let's switch to the offensive side of the ball. I know there's been a lot of talk about the inability, frankly, to get the ball in the hands of playmakers, particularly downfield. But from an outside observer, it looks like certainly Alex Smith and Andy Reid's hands have been tied by this offensive line. How bad is this unit, and are there ways in which it can improve, and what's really surprised you the most about the struggles early on?
The unfortunate thing with this offensive line is they are 100% under siege. Alex Smith right now has been sacked 18 times on the season, and that leads the NFL. As a team, the Chiefs have allowed 19 sacks. For some strange reason, they in Week 2's game against the Denver Broncos, that's where the additional sack comes in. There was a flea flicker play there, and it was a botched flea flicker, but Jeremy Maclin was brought down behind the line of scrimmage, so he was credited with a sack. But when you look at its front five, this is a unit since Andy Reid arrived. He's always had issues with the offensive line. The amount of sacks that Smith and even Chase Daniel, when he's come in, have been staggering. Over this three-year span here, Alex Smith has now been sacked, approaching 100 times, and Chase Daniel has been sacked 6 times. So you're talking about 100-plus sacks in a three-year span? That's just crazy. So when you look at this offensive line, if Alex Smith, as you gentlemen know, and most folks who follow the football know, the West Coast offense is predicated on precise timing. Timing routes, quick routes. And if Alex Smith, all of a sudden your defender is in his face after a 2 or 3 step drop, you've got issues. So the concern here with that offensive line is real. They've had massive protection issues since Andy Reid arrived, and it's not just this season.
You know, Herbie, as a Travis Kelce fantasy football owner, I've been generally pleased with what he's done. He was kind of everyone's sexy breakout star for his second season, and then they bring in Maclin. And obviously, you just alluded to all the offensive line problems, and that's kind of crippled the way things should go. But early in the season, it looked like these two guys, really going to help that offense. What dynamic have they specifically brought to Alex Smith and Andy Reid's offense and what they want to be able to do?
Well, they want to attack downfield, and this is something that we saw a lot of during OTAs and even training camp. Granted, and I think that's where we kind of fell in love with the notion that, hey, these guys are going to attack downfield because, you can't hit the quarterback during these practices. He's got that red jersey on. But if he has time, they will spread the ball, and you see him connect with Jeremy Maclin. You see the ability to hit the tight end because the tight end is so critical to this offense. It's so critical to Reed's version of the West Coast offense. But the problem is, once again, is Alex Smith just doesn't have the time in the pocket. And what you're seeing here with all this garbage time production, this is all coming late in the game. The defense is all of a sudden, the opposing team suddenly goes up. Now they're in prevent mode, and this just opens up everything else. But they need to get going at the beginning of the game, not in the late in the second half.
Herbie, we found out a little bit about the offense and the defense. I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about Dave Tobe's special teams. He's still a beloved figure here in Chicago. Tell us about the third phase. DeAnthony Thomas looks like a game breaker. The Bears have already allowed 2 kickoff return touchdowns. Who are the threats there, and what do you expect in that phase of the game Sunday?
Well, with Dave Tobe, and I think you just hit the 2 key positions there. DeAnthony Thomas, first off, they need the special team to start emerging here because through 4 games, it's kind of been non-existent there. You haven't seen the explosive pop that you like to see in the Dave Tobe special teams unit. DeAnthony Thomas needs to get going here, but as a kickoff return, you have Nile Davis. And he's certainly capable of taking it to the house because he had a kickoff return last year against the Denver Broncos. But, as far as a kicking game is concerned, Cairo Santos, coming off of a game where he had 7 field goals, his leg is stronger. He's put on some weight during the offseason, so he's got the distance. He can take it from the distance.
All right, Herbie, I'll wrap up with this. I'm taking a look at a lot of our predictions here. We have, about 8 different writers. I'm looking at them now, and every one of them mentions Arrowhead Stadium as a reason to pick the Chiefs. And you've obviously been there. You know it well. I know Arthur's been there before. It'll be my first time heading out there. I'm curious, how big is that home field advantage? And also, when you look at this fact that this team is 1-3, the way they've gotten to 1-3, how much do you factor the maybe some desperation into what's going to happen on Sunday?
I think it's going to be a lot of desperation because, you know, once again, this is a team that saw itself heading into the year. We want to be one of the league's elite, but you can't be 1-4 if you lose to Chicago. You have to win this game. The fans right now, you can feel it. You can sense it in the city area. There's a lot of, oh boy, if we don't win this weekend, it's going to be a long year. So I think the fans are going to bring it. And Arrowhead Stadium can be very, very loud. I'll take you back to the home opener against the Broncos. You felt the press box shake when they announced or they introduced Eric Berry. That's how loud it can get out there. So they're going to play a large role in this. So, you know, Jay Cutler, if he's got issues, you can't audible out of there. And if he's on the back end of the end zone in front of all those fans, it's going to affect that offense. But I think that's going to help the Chiefs.
All right, Herbie Teope of ChiefsDigest.com and the Topeka Capital Journal. Remember, you can follow him on Twitter at Herbie Teope, HERBIETEOPE. Herbie, thanks again, and we'll find out on Sunday who makes more head-scratching clock management decisions, Andy Reid or John Fox.
Yeah, that's going to be the interesting thing. So I guess, we'll have to look at each other in the press box.
Yeah, exactly. All right, thanks again for joining us.
Thanks a lot for having me.
All right, another big thank you to Herbie for all that Chiefs insight, and we are now joined by the closer, Hub Arkish. Hi, Hub.
He must be really good if he goes by Herbie.
Herbie, yes. That's true.
Good man. I've been avoiding that for many, many years.
I don't see a whole lot of it on your Twitter. People still just call you Hub, even if they're mad at you. Hub.
I don't want to have to block them.
So Hub's here, and it's Chiefs week, which is, of course, perfect because when people think of Hub and the Chiefs, they go back to your famous Super Bowl pick prior to the 2012 season, right?
I believe it was 12 or 13. It was Todd Haley's last year.
2012.
Okay. Of course, Arthur remembers it clearly.
Yes.
So I'm going to tell my version of this story because, Hub, I've heard you killed on the radio for this pick for years. And I'm pretty sure I was there when this first popped in your head. So we were trying to get Hub on Twitter at Pro Football Weekly for a very long time. And it's not so much that he was stubborn. I'm going to speak for you here, Hub. You're a busy man, so we had to kind of go through it.
I can be a little stubborn sometimes.
So finally, the day happened. It was July of 2012, and Hub had the time. I went in your office and kind of walked you through what Twitter was. And once you got it all set up, it actually took some time because we had to get another Hub Arkish removed from Twitter. We had to get the fake Hub off. So it took about a week. So once we were all set, so I remember staying in your office. You're at your computer, and I said, go ahead, fire off a tweet. And so you kind of looked around, put the fingers on the keyboard, and you decided to tweet out that you thought the Chiefs would go to the Super Bowl. And I'm pretty sure that was the first that you ever said anything about it, and then you stuck with it for the rest of that summer. So sometimes I felt to blame for that. So I wanted to put it on the record. That now I'm sure it was calculated because you put it out there for the masses. But I like to think that, it was a little more, innocent than people lead it to be.
Well, listen, there's a lot of ways to go here. I mean, what people tend to forget is that everybody and their brother picked the Chiefs to go to the playoffs that year.
That's not true.
Like it was the most ridiculous pick ever. I was one of the few who had him in the Super Bowl. I should have known better. Todd Haley was a friend at one time. I was still doing the Bears games on the radio when he was their wide receivers coach in the late 90s. Good guy. Crazy son of a bee. I mean, he just absolutely crazy. That has followed him pretty much everywhere he's gone, and it was obviously a bit of a mercurial pick. And I had also said 2 years earlier I thought he was a terrible hire as a head coach because of his unpredictability, and I just didn't know if he was the guy you wanted driving the ship. Good co-pilot. Don't know if you want him driving. And yet they had so much talent going into that season. I felt good about the pick, and I'm sure you will confirm. I've never apologized for it because,
nope.
Again, everybody thought they were a playoff team. I didn't think they were a 1-15 team. And, what it got them was Andy Reid and a chance to blow the number one overall pick on Eric Fisher.
Isn't it amazing, though, in all the times you've been on the airwaves, and Arthur's probably heard all from your Bears games to your TV shows, radio shows, that's the one thing that people seem to just stick on?
I don't find it the least bit surprising. that's where people like to go. And if you're going to do this, you've also heard one of my favorite old, I don't know if I made this up or not, but I've always said predictions are like rear ends, are really only good for two things. And you know, they are what they are. And if you're going to make them, you got to live with them. And if people get some enjoyment or a laugh out of it, then good. That's the point.
Arthur, do you still get enjoyment out of it?
Absolutely. Any chance we get to remind Hub of one of his less stellar picks, but I do tend to agree. It's funny how we always remember the ones that you miss, and then whenever there's a good little diamond in the rough or something comes out of left field, the credit for that never quite seems to come. So I guess that's just the profession we've chosen.
Before we get to player to watch and our predictions, I want to get each of your guys' take on the offensive line situation. So Will Montgomery placed on injured reserve with a broken fibula. We saw Matt Slauson moved to center. Now, I expect that, you know, we're taping this Tuesday early evening. On Wednesday, we might know what the Bears' plan is, though knowing John Fox, he might keep it all the way up until 90 minutes before kickoff. Regardless of what they decide to do, I'm curious, I'll start with you, Hub, what you think would be the best offensive line. Just so our listeners know, they did sign Barrett Jones, a former fourth-round pick center out of Alabama, to the practice squad, so they have him there. They have Hronos Grassu. Obviously, Matt Slauson played there in place of Montgomery. Hub, what do you think would be the best decision?
Well, we should add Barrett Jones was a former first-team All-American. Yep. I mean, he may be a fourth-round pick, but this guy was a great, great prospect. Now, obviously, hasn't been able to make an NFL team if he's available to add to your practice squad, but it's certainly an interesting addition. I think that they must have really liked Hronos Grassu, or they wouldn't have used a third-round pick on him, particularly when you look at some of the players that they left on the board. I think I'd be very surprised, though, for this Sunday if they didn't go with the same lineup that they finished, last Sunday against the Raiders with. It worked. Patrick Omame, played left guard for the first time and didn't embarrass himself at all. We don't know if Jermon Bushrod will be back. I guess that's part of it, too. We do know now that Charles Leno Jr. is pretty much exclusively a left tackle, although he didn't play it badly the other day. But, you don't mess with success. Everything was going wrong. You were 0-3. You finally got your first win. These guys overcame a ton of adversity. They weren't great, by the way. Right. Let's be clear about this. But they played pretty well, and I think you have to stay with this. The one thing about Hronos Grassu, and I had a really interesting conversation. It wasn't a conversation, it was some answers I got from Will, from Matt Slauson in the press conference the other day about Grassu's size, because he is so undersized. I think he's a guy who desperately needs a year with an NFL strength and conditioning coach before you want to put him out there every game. Now, that doesn't mean he won't play until next year, but I don't think they're going to be in a big hurry to rush him in there this week, knowing that they were able to get by without him last week.
And Arthur, when you look at this offensive line, I said this to you in the press box, when Montgomery went down from left to right, it was Leno, Omame, Slauson, Dukas, and Long, which meant there was not a single player in the spot they were in at the beginning of the preseason when it comes to the first team offensive line. So, where do you stand with, what you think will happen maybe this week and then down the line this season?
Yeah, I'm in the same boat as Hub. I think at least for this week, it has to be Matt Slauson. There's a couple big tells. John Fox raving about the job that Slauson and Omame did, and then his hesitance when asked about Hronos Grassu, who I don't doubt that he does like. Obviously, they wouldn't have spent a third-round pick on him, but you could kind of tell in his body language and the way and what he didn't say, I felt, that it's likely to be Matt Slauson this week. And then, of course, what we saw in the preseason from Hronos, and he's got a chance to be a special player. And there are some undersized centers who have succeeded as rookies. Corey Linsley in Green Bay is a great example, but Grassu was quite overmatched against second and third stringers in the preseason. He was getting pushed around, and that's obviously something he'll have to improve on. And we haven't even talked about Arrowhead. It's just such a rowdy environment. Matt Slauson, whether he's playing center or guard, is going to be just a huge, huge factor in getting the calls, getting the protection straight, and keeping everyone on the same page.
I'm going to keep stalling here, and I'm going to completely switch gears briefly to talk about the Cubs, because they have obviously the one game playoff Wednesday night. If you're listening to this after Wednesday night, well, you know what happened. And
championship.
Hub, Arthur and I were talking about the game, and I was telling him the 2003 playoffs, because I was asking him how he was going to watch it. I watched the 2003 playoffs at my parents' house with my grandparents. My bubby would lock herself in the bathroom when the Marlins were up to bat because she was so nervous. And I remember how kind of, maybe nervous not the word, but you got into the Blackhawks Stanley Cup and the way you watch it. You're a diehard Cub fan. You have been forever. What's kind of your game plan for Wednesday night, how you're going to watch the game?
I don't really have a game plan. It's all about the sport. I mean, that's, you know, and you watch each one differently. Baseball is not an inherently exciting game to watch. I mean, there's so much downtime. There's so much going on. I actually, with the Hawks, with the Bears, with the Bulls, I like to tape the games and then start about 45 minutes, an hour later, so I don't have to be bothered with all the interruptions. In baseball, you really can't do that. I mean, right. It's all about interruptions. So, I'd love to watch it with my sons, but they've let me know they have other things to do. So, or my grandsons, for that matter. I mean, my daughter went and married a damn Cardinals fan. Ooh. So, but don't worry. Blake's a Cubs fan. I've got all the gear for him. Listen, it's going to be a ton of fun, guys. At the end of the day, this season is already a tremendous success. Expecting anything more, I think, is ridiculous. It doesn't mean anything. It's one game. I mean, the winner isn't the better team. The loser isn't the weaker team. It's a lousy system. I have said that repeatedly since well before the Cubs got in it. The idea that you can end up with the second and third best team in baseball in a one-game playoff with all the teams that they're better than waiting to play five- and seven-game series, it's ridiculous. So, you know, obviously, you hope the Cubs win. I've actually already warned Arthur's mother that it is sports night at the house, so go do something, because you know you got the banner raising, you got the Hawks opener as well, so I've already got the VCR all set up. We're good to go. And I hope it's a good game to keep me from going to the Hawks early.
There you go. And it's funny, because the one game playoff, when it first started, I thought it was kind of cool, it was kind of exciting, and then once the Cubs were in, I'm like, no, this is terrible. This shouldn't be decided by one game.
But just to be clear, it's not that it's the Cubs.
Right.
Second and third best team in baseball. Yes. It's ridiculous. That's the problem I have with it.
Okay, back to Bears, because I guess we are a Bears podcast. Let's give our player to watch in Sunday's game in Kansas City. Arthur, you first.
Yeah, I always get to go first, and I'm guessing you guys may be on the same page, and I kind of gave it away already, but I think it has to be Matt Slauson. I just think the importance of what he meant to the line last week, and just what it's going to mean to potentially have a week of practice to take snaps and improve on the six he said he had taken prior to last Sunday. It's an offensive line, like we said, that has had no cohesiveness, and I just think he's the glue now, and he's going to have to be great. We heard Herbie talk about how good Jay Howard has been. He should see a lot of Matt Slauson, whether he's at center or guard.
Well, first of all, one other kind of interesting thing that I picked up at the press conference on Monday, and then I'll answer the question. John Fox let something slip, and I don't know if nobody caught it or if it was just like me, they didn't want to call him on it, okay? But he had talked about this and talked about that, and then when asked about how Spencer Lanning did, he talked about being able to come in and do everything, not just punt, and that early in the week they weren't even sure what they were going to do as far as holding, and that actually Cutler was the holder early in practice. They knew from Monday of last week that Jay Cutler was playing, because otherwise he wouldn't have been the holder in practice. So it doesn't mean anything, but I just thought it was kind of fun, and it slipped through, and I figured there was no point in calling him on it, but I got to get it in somewhere, so we'll get it in our podcast. Maybe we'll get credit for it. Kevin, we talked about this out in the newsroom a little while ago. I think this is one of the best matchups of the season. I was in Lambeau a week ago Monday. I called the Packers-Chiefs game for Westwood One, and from the sidelines, I was fascinated by the matchup of Justin Houston and Barclay, the kid who's filling in for Brian Bulaga, because it was a backup tackle. But what I noticed in following them the whole game is Justin Houston is not like most top pass rushers. They don't move him around. He doesn't come from all different places on the field. He took about 95% of those snaps on the outside shoulder of the right tackle. It is going to be Kyle Long and Justin Houston almost all day long. And to me, that's a fantastic matchup. I think Kyle, in just a couple weeks, has come a long way. I wouldn't be shocked to see him win the matchup. And, you know, Barclay got his head handed to him, but Houston only had one sack in the game. So it depends on how you measure it. But to me, that's a heavyweight fight. That's going to be a ton of fun to watch.
That will be fun. And no reprieve for Kyle Long, who's gone, you know, from the Seahawks D-line to Khalil Mack, now gets Justin Houston. I'm going to be watching Adrian Amos, because regardless of who's next to him, it's a big game for him to make a play. The safeties haven't been in position to make plays just the way the games have gone. But this is a game where he might be needed when you consider Travis Kelce and Jeremy Maclin and what they can do up the middle of the field, up the seam, right where Amos is going to be. I've liked his physicality against the run. Can he defend the pass if he needs to? So I'm going to be keeping a close eye on him. Let's move on to our predictions. And we will start with our producers. Associate producer John Sally, you are up.
You know, I think this game shoots out a little bit. Kansas City's secondary has been bleeding yards for a couple of weeks now. I'm still not entirely sold on the Bears defense. So I think Kansas City 31, Bears 27.
Okay. By the way, I think it's right now, as we're taping this, is a 9.5-point spread.
I believe that's right, with a 48 over under, which Chiefs seems pretty high.
At home. Dan Mott?
I'm doing Chiefs 28, Bears 24.
All right. Arthur?
Yeah, I'm surprised by that big spread. I think it's going to be close, but I think in the end, talent's going to win out. There's probably five or six blue chippers on the Chiefs, maybe two on the Bears. That road environment, Chiefs in desperation mode. I'll say 24 Chiefs, 21 Bears.
All right, Hub?
Arthur just stole my whole deal. First of all, that point spread kind of surprised me, but I'm picking it by 10, but I guess maybe it makes sense. You know, the Chiefs may be 1-3, but their three losses are to the 4-0 Packers, the 4-0 Bengals, and the 4-0 Broncos, and two of them on the road. They're just a better football team, and I've got it 30-10, Kansas City. I'm sorry, not 30-20, 30-20, Kansas City.
So, yeah, it's funny to see kind of everybody picking the Chiefs, you know, because as we talked about earlier in the show, people are being realistic about what this Bears team can do. I'm focused on the fact that Kansas City is at home and they are desperate. You know, this is a team that should be a playoff team when you look at what's on the roster. They need this game much more than the Bears do. I have Chiefs 30, Bears 27. In a bonus prediction, I have my Northwestern Wildcats 20, Hubs Michigan Wolverines 17 in the big matchup in the big house.
There's an objective pick for you guys. What a great piece of journalism that was. Okay, I don't know those teams all that well. I'll tell you, Fitz has done a great job with Northwestern. There's no question about that. Obviously, Harbaugh, you know, I think everybody knew he was going to do a great job to have brought him as far as he has, as quick as he has. But honestly, I haven't watched enough of either of them to know. I would only be guessing and showing my bias like you just did.
I'm perfectly comfortable showing it.
Well, you should. Yeah. It's not the sport we cover. You're allowed to. But I got a bonus for everybody here that came to me working on the score a little while ago. With all the, and again, I realize it's a podcast, I'm not sure when you're listening, but as we did this late Tuesday, we had heard this flurry of Bears moves that left them with an open roster spot. Kenny Phillips is about to be released by the New Orleans Saints. Fantastic number one pick 3 years ago. I think, was he rookie? He was close to defensive rookie of the year. Has been out with knee troubles each of the last couple of years. My guys in New Orleans are telling me it may have already happened. It's going to happen any minute. They're making moves down there. Of course, Ryan Pace, the principal scout there. Don't be surprised if that open roster spot is for a wounded, but hopefully eventually recovered, Kenny Phillips.
Yeah, there's some definitely some ways the Bears can go with that roster spot. So we'll have to wait and see. That's going to do it for Episode 6 of the ChicagoFootball.com Bears Podcast. Don't forget, for all of the best Bears news and analysis, visit us at ChicagoFootball.com. And please go ahead and subscribe to our podcast on iTunes so you can always get our latest episodes every Tuesday evening. You can follow all of us on Twitter at Bears_Insider, at ShyFootball. He's at Hub_Arkish, at Arthur Arkish. I'm at K Fishbane. We also want to thank our sponsor, your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. Fall is here, and you can count on the dependable and long-lasting Silverado to be your harvesting partner. Check out all the Chevy truck selections at ChevyDriveChicago.com today. And drive what Dan Hampton drives. A big thank you to our guest, Herbie Teope, breaking down the Chiefs, our producers, Dan Mott and John Sally, and for all of us at ChicagoFootball.com. Have a great week, and we'll recap Bears Chiefs and talk about Bears Lions next week.